My name is Willie, and I am an alcoholic. Haven't found it necessary to have a drink of alcohol since June the 19th, 1957, and for this I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous with the guidance of God. Wesley loves me. I know that. I know Wesley loves me. That's why he gave me step one and step 12. Sometime you're, you know, loved beyond your understanding. I hope y'all can tell that I love this program. And I don't use the word love loosely. I was brought up in an era where the word love meant something. And it still means something. I don't mean that. But it's been sort of balled around a little bit. So I don't say I love many things, but I hope that by now you know I love this program. What it's done for you, I love seeing it in your eyes, in your faces, and I love what it's done for me. I overheard accidentally last night one lady say to another lady, Willie doesn't take her sobriety very seriously. And I thought, oh, I hope that you don't think that. Willie doesn't take Willie very seriously. I do indeed take my sobriety and my program very seriously. But I had beautiful people like Willard Pegg and all of the long-timers that were here to break me of the habit of, when I got to you, of taking Willie so seriously that I couldn't see beyond the end of my nose. So I hope I can dispel that as far as getting it clarified. I know that this is going to ring Lloyd's bell over here. We have a little man, and I know that this 12th step is very seriously, and we're going to get to it in just a moment. But this is our last meeting. And, no, we're going to be meeting in our heads. I'm going to be meeting in my head all the way back to Texas this afternoon, because I'm going to have the joy of walking in and seeing the expression on my husband's face. Because those of you who were not here, when the tornado did hit my home Thursday night a week ago, my husband was in Russia. He got back yesterday at noon. He did not know that a tornado had hit his home. He knew he lived with one. And I know he's going to be tempted to think, you know, what did Willie do while I was gone? But we're all going to be still holding meetings in our minds when we get home. And I want to end this up in several different ways. Kylie and Joe gave us such a beautiful view last night of step 12. So I can't add whole bunch of stuff to it in just a little while. If you were here, and most of you were, you got your bucket full. But I want to just start this meeting with we had a little fella down in Texas named Jim Corbett. Jim was a precious little man. He stayed sober a long, long time. And when you saw Jim, he didn't have too much to say. He wasn't a big talker. But he handed you this little card. And especially if he thought you were 2 or 3 years new on the program. And I guess maybe he was the one that really taught me to not take myself too seriously and to know that the joy has to be, well, you know, newcomers will come into a meeting sometime and some of the long-timers and even some of the 2 or 3 year people will be sitting there and they'll say, we're so glad you came. There's so much joy in this program. And they look like they have just been hit in the face with a dead fish. You don't see the joy. All you hear are these words coming out of their mouths. And I think we need to show these new people that, you know, sober is happy. Because many of them are coming in thinking the same thing I did. My God, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? How am I ever going to have any fun? And I think we need to communicate to them that this is where it's at. This is where the fun part really begins, is when you get into this fellowship. And this joy we need to give away. Knowledge, yes, we need to give it away. Our hearts we need to give away. This program, but the joy we need to give to each other too. I love this, and this has helped me so much, your little button. I want it all. I want it all. And if that's greed, God forgive me. But little Jim would hand you this card, and I guess he passed out in his lifetime, millions of them, and Lloyd probably has one in his pocket. It's his little takeoff on Alcoholics Anonymous and what it is. Many of you I know have heard it. It says, AA is a fellowship designed and executed by a bunch of ex-drunks whose only qualification for membership is that they can't hold their liquor, and furthermore, they don't want to learn how. It has no rules or dues or fees and no nothing that any sensible organization ought to have. At meetings, the speaker starts out on one subject and ends up talking about something entirely different, concluding by saying, I don't really know anything about the program except that it works. The groups are always broke, and many appear, no, always broke. The groups are always broke, but money appears when they need it. They're always losing members, but always seem to grow. They claim that AA is a selfish program, but will help you with any problem from pruning your garden to getting rid of your mother-in-law. Every group passes laws and rules and edicts and pronouncements which everyone immediately ignores. Members who disagree are privileged to walk out in a huff, quitting forever, only to return as though nothing has happened and be greeted accordingly. AAs are taught to laugh at themselves. God made man, and God also made laughter. God seems to be pleased with our poor efforts and makes everything run right, no matter who pushes the wrong button. Maybe he's pleased not with our perfection, but with our sincerity. Maybe he's pleased because we're trying to be nobody but ourselves. We don't know how it works, but members keep receiving their dividend checks from the AA investment. Because it's smart to stay sober. God bless little Jim. We're going to talk about and add what little we can add this morning to what's already been said about this beautiful 12th step that we have. This is our crowning glory, isn't it? Our 12th step is our crowning glory. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Each time I've gotten up here, I've stressed to you that I think these words were chosen so well. In all of our affairs. And it's so hard, I think, in the beginning for us to realize that this must be done. It's telling me that in all areas of my life, to me, this program in the beginning was just meant to apply to my alcoholism and my drinking. I didn't realize that my behavior in every area of my life had to be straightened up, and that the principles that you give to me in the 11 steps preceding. I have to take all of those principles and put them into my life. This cannot be done overnight. It was not something that I could just say, all right, I will it to be done, and it will just automatically happen. I have to go after the chickens. I have to do the groundwork. I have to put some effort that in every area of my life, a piece of this program exists. In my marriage, in my profession, in my association with you, in my association with people out there, in all of my affairs. That word cannot mean anything else. I feel so much pain when there is someone in my group in pain because they have ceased to use that word all. And they're in trouble on the job. They're in trouble with the marriage, and simply they have failed to carry these principles into that marriage. Of course, we have relationships that there is no way to put together something that is too scattered. Of course, we have circumstances like that, but there's too many of us that'll leave our meetings and go home and leave our principles there at the meeting room. In all of our affairs, we have by this time had a spiritual awakening. I don't know how we can get up those steps that have been shown to us this weekend so beautifully. Even if we've just given them a good try, there's no way we can have not made any progress. And perfection, we're told that's not what we're after. We don't want to get so earthly good. I mean, so heavenly good is quoted sometime, that we're no earthly good. And I don't mean that we have to be, but by this time, if we have gone through these steps as simply and beautifully as Charlie and Joe have led us this weekend, there's no way that some growth hasn't taken place. Sometimes it's not always easily seen in ourselves or in other members, but maybe we're not looking hard enough. In the 12 and 12, it starts out, the joy of living is the theme of AA's 12th step. The joy. The joy. It doesn't say goodness. It doesn't say unreality or anything like that. The joy. And action is the key word. And you know the two go together? I have my wise old Indian sayings all over my house. And whenever I hear something that appeals to me, I put it on a little piece of board and pin it up someplace, inside a cabinet, any place I can find to put it. And you know, one of them that I put up recently is, I'm too busy to get organized. Action. I think something that we don't want to get too busy, or we can't tend to the step that we were just talking about. But I want to stay in action. I want to stay doing something, because that's where they tell me that the key word is action. And with the action, I'm going to get the joy that's promised in this book. Here we turn outward. See, a lot of this, a lot of our program, we have to keep looking in to ourselves, into self. And then this step tells us that we look outward toward our fellow alcoholics who are still in distress. Here we experience the kind of giving that asks no reward. And that's a strange feeling for us, isn't it? I at least always wanted to thank you. That's the least I figured that people could do for me all through my life. when I did a little favor for them. I didn't want them necessarily to fall all over themselves, but at least I expected a thank you. In Alcoholics Anonymous, working with a sick drunk or working with a drunk that's getting well, I don't have to have that thank you. Just watching him walk a little bit straighter, watching her get that beautiful dignity back in her feminine face, that's the thank you. That's all we need. No reward. Here we begin to practice all 12 steps of the program in our daily lives. And I'm glad they put daily. Or didn't they use these words? Daily lives. So that we and those about us may find emotional security. So that we and those about us can find emotional security. When the 12th step is seen in its full implication, it's really talking about the kind of love that has no price tag on it. And so many of us had gotten used to having a price tag. I do this for you, you do this for me. It's a whole new way of thinking. But the rewards are so great, aren't they? That if we tried to fill a basket full of them, we'd have basket after basket after basket. Our 12th step also says that as a result of practicing all of these steps, we have each found something called a spiritual awakening. To new AAs, this often seems like a very dubious and improbable state of affairs. It did to me. What do you mean when you talk about a spiritual awakening? Maybe there are many definitions of spiritual awakening as there are people who have had them. And I am so glad that it's been brought out. That we all do not have to follow the same pattern on our spiritual awakening. That for each of us in our own way, this can take place. Sometimes it is sudden, and that's good. Sometimes it goes along very slowly at first and then takes off very rapidly, and that's good. And then there are those of us who are the plodders, and we walk down the road just putting one foot in front of the other. One foot in front of the other. A good, steady, even pace. And it says that's all right, that they don't all have to be the same kind. But certainly, each genuine one has something in common with all the others. And these things which they have in common are not too hard to understand. When a man or a woman has a spiritual awakening, the most important meaning of it is that he has now become able to do and to feel and to believe that which he could not do before on his unaided strength and resources alone. Those are little tiny words, do, feel, and believe. He has been granted a gift. And I have to constantly remember that I didn't pay anything for what you've given me. It has been a gift. He has been granted a gift which amounts to a new state of consciousness and being. He has been set on a path which tells him that he's really going somewhere. That life is not a dead end. Not something to be endured or mastered. After that first couple of years of sobriety, of real solid sobriety, or real solid dryness, I endured my sobriety. And it was such a long 2 years, long and painful and hard, and no one that I came in contact with could I help. Oh, I was so busy, you know, trying to give this thing away. This thing. I didn't even have this thing. I was trying to give away. It started like trying to give somebody a $1,000 bill when you don't have 25 cents in your pocket. I was enduring sobriety, and it showed. Therefore, I had nothing. I could give them all the the spiel out of the books. I could tell them all of this stuff that I had been told in AA. But, you know, it fell on deaf ears. Because no one could see it within me. I love our expression that we not only talk the talk, we have to learn to walk the walk. Because people, this world right now, everywhere we turn, it's noisy. And everywhere we turn, there are words. Words, words, words. You turn on the television, you know, and there's just words. And you get where, you know, in school, when I teach, I try to give as few directions as possible. For the simple fact that if you talk to a child too much, they just reach up and go, bloop, and turn you off. And people are the same way. You can be sitting listening to the news and you're sitting there and your eyes are on the television. There are no one else in the room except you. And you're sitting there and you're staring at this tube. Someone will walk in and say, what did he just say about what had happened? Where did that happen? And you'll say, I don't have the remotest idea. Words don't mean really very much. Until we take those words, if I would have been listening to that broadcast, if it had happened in North Carolina, I would have immediately thought, gee, I hope my friends in North Carolina are right. But see, it was just a bunch of words, and I had heard so many words ahead of it that I had turned it off. So I don't think it's so much, and our book tells us this, what we say to that newcomer, and it's been brought out this weekend, it's not so much what we say, but what we do. We show them these principles. We don't lie to them and then tell them not to lie. We don't practice in our daily lives being less than what we should be and then tell them that they should. It's sort of like the mama that says, you know, to the kid, don't do like I do like I say do. And this is not going to get it done. They'll get in the car when the kid's little and they'll tear around, you know, and they'll roll through stop signs and they'll hit that caution light when it's way past time to hit that caution light and they'll run on through on that red light and that kid's just sitting there watching mama, watching daddy do these things. And then the first time he ever gets a traffic ticket, you're grounded for 6 months. And yet he's watched mama and daddy break the law. So that kid's going to come right up. And he's not even really going to be aware of where he got this trait of not having any respect for the law. Because he's heard daddy cuss out the policeman. He's seen daddy roll through red lights. And he's seen him roll through stop signs. Our people in AA are the same way. They come to us, and dear God, there's so many of them that come that are sick, 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 just like we were sick, sick, sick. And they want an example. Many of them have been already to the wordy places. They've been there. They have been inundated with words in different places where they've been. I think what they need from us more than anything in this world is to look and see what we do, how we practice these principles in all of our affairs. If we cheat on our spouses, then they're going to say, hey, wait a minute. Wait just a minute. I thought this was supposed to be in all of your affairs. If we padden expense accounts in our business, they don't say, wait a minute, I thought it was supposed to be in all of your affairs. I think what this gave me, I couldn't do this in the beginning, but I think when I finally got through my head that this was going to be the happiest way to work this program, to carry this program into all facets of my life, like they're asking me to do in Step 12. That there would be a feeling of cleanness and relief every time they run that ad, you know, about how do you spell relief? I always want to say you spell it H-O-N-E-S-T. Just being as honest as I know how in all areas of my life. And, you know, this doesn't even mean, I thought a truly honest person was so goody-two-shoes, you know, that their hair hurt. And I just thought, I just can't see where I can do that and have any fun out of living. But the most beautiful people I have ever met in my life are straight as arrows in every area of their life. This, as it goes on to tell us about Step 12, it proves this to us. And think of the people that are around you in your group that are practicing these principles in all of their affairs. Look at their lives. Don't worry about the old sore heads. Because there's some reason why their head's sore. There's some reason. You know, an old chicken doesn't get his head sore unless he stands around there and lets some old other chicken peck a hole in it. Look at the people around you that are practicing these principles in all of their affairs and see Alcoholics Anonymous in action. You better believe it's good to know this book. Our big book. It's good to study like we have this weekend. There is nothing that'll take the place of that. But there's also nothing that'll take the place of you being the very best example of Alcoholics Anonymous in every area of your life. Even with those people that don't, you know, I think I get a kick every now and then when I'm at a teacher's meeting or a civic meeting, or I'm very active politically at a political meeting, and I have an urge every once in a while. I think there's a little devil rides on my shoulder. I really do. And he's not real dangerous. He's just sort of fun. But I have an urge every once in a while to just get up and say, you know, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've always had a dread of getting up to give a talk at the National Teachers Association and say, my name is Willie and I'm alcoholic. But then I have this urge to do it, too. Because there have been so many people. I've had parents come to a meeting of children that I had taught. And absolutely, you talk about teeth dropping on the floor. No, nothing else needs to be said, does it? Man, I tell you, I've been the only woman up here, but I didn't, you know, I've been privileged that y'all weren't I have sound effects that I didn't even ask for. That's great. But, you know, I stand there, I'd watch them when they come in, and they say, you're an alcoholic? It's beyond their comprehension. Because, see, we talk about the education that's taking place, and it's all good and everything, but lay people still don't understand us. They're told all about alcoholics. They have these talk shows, you know, on the television and everything. We're getting so, you know, we almost having to keep out the social climbers. We're getting so popular, and Our disease is getting so dignified. My active disease just wasn't that dignified, was it? But the education is not really going to get it done, because these people still come in and say, you know, you're an alcoholic? Oh, no, you must just be, you know, within the teaching realm of they can't. Their idea of an alcoholic is still what mine was. Under the bridge. A completely defective, person. A person with no will, no nothing. That's still their idea. Or they wouldn't be so surprised to see me there. We have a job when we leave here. Each and every one of us. And it's not to be perfect people. It's just to be the best kind of person that we can be in all of our affairs. I love the sentence down on page 110 there at the middle of page 12 and 12 when it says, what he has perceived is a free gift, when it's talking about all of the things that have happened to him. And yet usually, at least in some small part, he has made himself ready to receive it. You cannot fill up a bucket that's already full. All you're going to do is make a mess, and it's going to slosh over the sides. I came to you so full of myself that you couldn't put one drop in that bucket without making a mess. Continue the mess that I was making, put it that way. So until I was ready to receive this, we found, many of us, to our sorrow and to our consternation, that we can't give this away. We can't really give it away to people that don't want it. We have to sort of help them fertilize the ground, don't we? We have to sort of help them get ready. And we do this with patience and with love and with tolerance and with a thing up in our head here called remembering. Please, as you stay sober, don't forget how it was to be drunk. Because if you do, there is no way that you can really feel with that newcomer. We are told that our past is a valuable asset to us. And it doesn't mean we wallow in it. It means we simply remember it. I want to remember that last drunk for the rest of my life. I want to remember every mile I walked in one house. I wish I'd have had one of those little clock things to clock it, because I know I walked 100 miles in those 3 or 4 days. I want to remember all the pain that I went through, so that when that person walks through the door, I will not seem arrogant. I will not seem to him as a person that will not understand. I want to keep those memories and know that as I hurt, he hurts. The same way I do with my kids in school. I want to remember what it is when I deal with them, what it was to be a kid. As I get older, I still want to remember what it was like to be younger. All of the frustrations of wanting everything yesterday, of wanting so many things that I spent all of my time pursuing things that I ended up that I didn't even want. All right. I don't need any more visual or sounding aids. But I want to remember the feelings that a kid has. That's the way I can teach him best. Is to know that he has days when, he just wants to go out and walk off of a cliff someplace. Because remember how dramatic things were when you were in your teen years? So these I want to remember in my profession. This is the way I carry my AA and try to carry it into all phases of my life. I spoon feed AA to every kid I teach. I am teaching at the college level now, and I have young kids that are just beginning in college, because I teach speed reading, and reading improvement. And in the speed reading course, I get a lot of high school seniors and freshmen that realize when they get close to college level and get into college level that they can't read fast enough to cover the material. So I teach this speed reading course, and I try to remember they're young and they're just beginning on their pursuit of knowledge. But I still, at the college level, I spoon feed my students Alcoholics Anonymous. And it doesn't make any difference whether they know what they're getting or not. I can't help. If you stay in this program, if you stay around the winners, if you try, there is no way that you're going to keep from getting better. And I think that's wonderful. There's nothing else. You know, I can go out and play tennis every day or play golf or everything, and some days I'm better and some days I'm worse. But there's just no way that I can keep coming to AA and keep trying to practice these principles in all of my affairs that I won't get better.